It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 260. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I are pumped about the basketball win against Colorado, and we feel a lot better about this hoops team making a run after seeing that game. We also do part one of our Poinsettia Bowl preview. And on this episode, we also discuss Jason Buck and Independence, terrible bowl games, and how Jimmer owns China. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Join us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 260. 260.
Is that like a special number?
I don't believe it is.
To celebrate it somehow?
I don't believe it. I believe that it's actually an unspecial number.
Aren't all numbers special in their own way?
No.
No.
Certain numbers are more special than others, right? Like 250, that's a big one, right? 300, when we hit 300. What about 275? 300
is a big deal. 275, I feel like the 75 marker is important at like 75 or 150, you know, 225 feels like, you know, 275. It's not doing it for me.
That seems very negative on your part. Seems very negative. Well, Matt, we got a big show coming up, so we got a lot of things to talk about. Certainly, we will be part one of our Poinsettia Bowl preview. We'll be talking hoops, we'll be talking Jimmer, and we'll be talking Jason Buck, Matt. But first up, let's start out with the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Matt, BYU women's volleyball season ended with a Sweet 16 loss to Texas, a very tight 5-set match, but unfortunately the Cougars fell to the Longhorns. Our brother Don needed help trash-talking with a friend of his.
Yep. Not surprising that he needed some help.
Somehow, with all of the windows open, when this friend trash-talked about this loss, Don was not really able to deliver. You and I had some good suggestions for him, though. Did you have a favorite way to trash-talk with Texas Longhorn fans?
I would have just kept texting him pictures of Taysom hurdling, guys.
I would have asked him if he had gotten tickets yet to their bowl game.
Oh!
Or ask him how that Charlie Strong hire is working out. How is that working out?
How's it working out for UT, or how's that working out for Charlie Strong? I mean, he's still getting paid, right?
Yeah, he's made a lot of money.
He's doing just fine.
He didn't
get the FAU job, but whatever.
If you were a premier coach, I know they've already filled the vacancy, but is that still a premier job at this point?
UT?
Is it still a premier job?
I don't know. It's a tough spot. I mean,
I think it's still a premier job. But,
you know, it's a storied program.
Yeah.
That's, you know, had some history of success, and, you know, it's a big program, a lot of resources. So, yeah, I think so.
Here's the thing. Like, if Harbaugh took it over, do you think they'd be contending for the national championship in a year and a half?
Yes, probably. Right?
You know what I mean?
I think Harbaugh could do that anywhere. He's magic. Herman's not going to get you there.
That's why I think Herman hire, they already tried that. His name was Charlie Strong. Didn't they do this thing already?
Lane Kiffin would have been a good choice.
Lane Kiffin?
But his personality probably wasn't right.
Man, he's like a football genius and an idiot at the same time.
I understand he doesn't do well with the boosters.
I think it's human interactions. He struggles sometimes. But, heck, he knows what he's doing on a football field. That's for sure. That Alabama team might do something this year. It's possible. His offense. With a freshman quarterback, man. A freshman. They couldn't win a national championship with a freshman quarterback. I'm not saying he's terrible, but he's not really good yet.
No, but he's going to be good.
He is going to be good. Men's volleyball, Matt, they are top of the preseason poll for the, what is it called, the MSPSSY, whatever, for the second season in a row, and their season starts against Lewis on the road in January 6th. So we'll have lots of men's volleyball coverage coming up in the next few weeks on the podcast. We'll even do a mini preview at some point. Matt, let's move on to Cougars in the pros. With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Ooh, sit down, Goodell.
The Cleveland Browns select. Let's see here. Ziggy, first the Bears had two tackles. Lackluster season continues. Kyle Van Noy is playing as we speak. You and I, because of my work, we are actually missing the second half of the Patriots game, but they are beating the Ravens handily. Matt, I may lose in the first round. I have this awesome team in one of my fantasy leagues, and luckily I am up by 5 points right now. I just need Steven Goskowski to not score a bunch of points.
Well, that's not going well for you.
No, I think it is going well. They'll keep scoring touchdowns. Extra points, yeah. I mean,
extra points won't hurt you. You just don't need field goals.
I just need him to not kick. Like, if he kicks two more field goals, I'm host. But anyway, nobody cares about my fantasy team.
Nope.
Nobody cares. Obviously, Dennis Pitta also going tonight on the other side of the ball for the Baltimore Ravens. Daniel Sorensen, career-high 8 tackles versus the Raiders. So that's pretty awesome.
Dennis Pitta had one catch tonight while being covered by Kyle Van Noy.
No, stop it.
Yes, sir.
That, you just blew my mind.
Kyle Van Noy looks pretty good. Not going to lie to you.
Kyle Van Noy, Pro Bowl next year.
I think he's a great fit for the Patriots.
I think it was just bad luck with Detroit. I think there was a fit issue, there was injuries, and some guys need a second chance, and they grab it.
The Lions, right? The Lions seem to have a chronic bad luck problem.
Yes, that is definitely
correct. I'll just leave it at that.
That is factually correct. Now, Matt, you might have heard of a guy named Jimmer Fredette.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, so Jimmer Fredette. Now, Jimmer plays in a country you might have heard of, known as China.
Small country, right?
Yeah, small little country.
Small island nation of China?
Yeah, not big geographically or population-wise. Fredette right now is the biggest thing going on in Chinese basketball. His last game...
Besides Yao Ming.
Well, I think he might be bigger than Yao now. Okay, that's
Yao Ming's like 10 feet tall.
Well, and he owns the team.
Nobody's bigger than Yao Ming.
I believe he owns the team that Jimmer's playing for.
Yeah.
Jimmer's last game, Matt, 42 points, four threes. He also had 8 rebounds, 4 assists in an overtime victory. I think he's averaging right now, let's see, 39.3 points. He's shooting 50%, including 42% from 3-point land and 92% from the foul line. 8.7 rebounds, 5.2 assists, and 2.3 steals. Now, before you get too excited, the artist formerly known as Stefan Marbury averages 23 points a game in that league.
The artist formerly known as Stefan Marbury. That's nice. Nice touch there.
Yeah, but Jimmer's having – does this change anything, or does this just mean he gets to have a nice second career in China? I mean, I think if I'm an NBA team watching this film and I've watched some of the highlights – I don't see anything I didn't already know about Jimmer. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is not a gate back to the NBA.
No, this is not a gate back to the NBA. Though their season does, if I have it right, their season does end in time for him to latch on with an NBA team if that comes about.
Yeah, and he's going to play out his career in China. He'll be the Ben Cahoon of this Chinese basketball league.
That's right. He'll be a Hall of Famer.
Go down as one of the best ever, and yeah.
And it's all right. It's all right. I am coming to terms with it, Matt. I'm coming to terms with it.
It's great.
So, Matt, before we move on to
the comparison to Ben Cahoon is meant to be a compliment.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if you look at what that guy did, it was really some amazing stuff.
Yeah. And obviously, Cahoon didn't have the college career that Jimmer did. But your point of, you know,
one of the best CFL players ever.
Ever. Yeah. Yeah. Hall of Fame CFL player. And Jimmer, you know, people are like, well, this is what we expect to happen. You know, I did not expect him to do quite this well. You know, he hadn't played a whole lot in the last few years. Right? Not in games. So it was good to see that he has it still in him, Matt. So we have a tweet bag question, Matt, that we'll get to next.
Tweet bag.
Wow, that was really slow.
I'm having some voice issues. We had my son had his championship football game over the weekend, and I'm still recovering.
I'm on like the third week of a cold, so I'm also having voice issues. So this should be a pleasant thing to listen to. You may want to do this on that half speed. On that half speed that we showed you last week.
Or was
that
2 weeks ago? So funny.
Oh my gosh.
We sounded so drunk.
Oh yeah. Oh boy. All right. So Matt, in the Deseret News, there was a guest article written by a certain man by the name of Jason Buck. Another individual you might have heard of.
Who had a great college football career, by the way.
Had a great college football career and then went on to play in the NFL. Matt, I'm going to summarize Jason's article. If you haven't seen it, you should go out and do it. Basically, I'll summarize it this way. He thinks independence stinks and that we need to join the Mountain West Conference or the American Conference, or we will continue to be irrelevant. Matt, he makes a bunch of points in here. I'm not going to go point by point. He also wants to expand the stadium to 80,000 seats, install state-of-the-art Wi-Fi, and then give free tickets to all students enrolled at BYU. So, Matt, I believe you have a response for Mr. Buck, and I would love to hear it. Now before we say that, sorry. We did have a question. This is from Andre Hutchins. He says, I respectfully disagree with his position. I'm sure there are many things that he nostalgically misses about BYU football, but joining any conference that is not a P5 conference will undo all the progress made on improvements of access and exposure. This is Andre Hutchins. Did I say that?
Yeah, I think he did.
I think I did. Not to mention the significant increases in revenue. Enough of my opinion. Please share yours. Matt, Andre's begging for it. What's your opinion?
So I'd say this. A couple of things I agree with that Jason Buck said. State-of-the-art Wi-Fi. Necessary. A couple of things I don't understand. Free tickets for all of the students. Now, I get the feeling that he's saying that, you know, when he talks about attendance, that the fans and the students aren't engaged because we're not in a conference. And a couple of things I'd like to point to first is we had students camping out the night before the game outside of a stadium to see an 8-win team play UMass.
Yes.
Right?
That is correct.
Engagement with the student body is not a problem. You look at what they're doing in football and basketball right now with The Rock and the numbers that they're getting out there and the stuff that they're doing for the kids and Kalani Sitake in the stands and all this stuff. The student body is engaged. And engaging the student body is not a problem that needs to be fixed, in my opinion. The Wi-Fi, that is a problem that needs to be fixed, from what I understand. I haven't been to the LES in a while, but that's a problem in all stadiums.
There's a lot of stadiums, by the way, that have Wi-Fi issues. There is, you can fix it. It's costly, but you know, that is not, there are major athletic venues much more prominent than Lavelle Edwards Stadium that have problems within stadium Wi-Fi. So I agree with you and Jason that it'd be great if that was there. But on the other hand, are people not going to games because the Wi-Fi stinks?
No.
So therefore, is it probably the top priority on the stadium upgrade list? It might be now that they've done the screen and some of the other stuff. Maybe it is now at the top. But anyway, other thoughts?
So I took the liberty because he made some comment about, you know, he's like how the, you know, we've all seen the waning attendance numbers. So I went back and I pulled home attendance numbers from 2005 through 2016.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, I did. Over those 12 seasons, we averaged just under 61,000 people per home game. Okay? Now, if you draw a line between 2010 and 2011, so you go before independence and after independence, you will see that in the six seasons just before independence, we averaged just over 62,000. Okay? So that first set of 6 years is above the average for the whole set of 12. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
The most recent 6 years, you see, we're just over 59,000. So yes, the most recent 6 years since independence, we're getting a few thousand less people per home game out. That is true. And you do see a shift in the numbers over those 12 years. The peak is 2007, 2008, 2009. After 2009, you see the numbers basically on a steady decline. It's not declining every year over year, but you move from 64,000 in 2009 to 58,000 in 2016, and it just slowly drops.
Okay.
But you know what else? Okay, so I see that. Right after independence, that drops. But you know what's very telling? 2007, 2008, 2009. We won 11 games. We won 10 games. We won 11 games.
Okay.
Since that season, we've only won 10 games once.
Not as good.
We've had a 7-win season, several 8-win seasons, and a 9-win season. Independence is not... And you could even argue that the drop of a few thousand fans attending games in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, I mean, you're talking about about 3,000 people, is not even statistically alarming.
And it may have absolutely nothing to do with what's happening on the field either. With all the other variables. Yes.
But mm-hmm. I think, and I know causation and correlation are not the same thing, but... If we're concerned about this drop in attendance, I don't believe independence is the issue. The issue is winning games.
Yes, it's always the issue.
We've been losing more games every year since except with the exception of 2011. The last big season was 2009. And if you look at the attendance numbers, we were up in above 64,000. In those years where we were winning 10 and 11 games, with the exception of 2006, because we had a 6-win season the year before that. People weren't coming out. You want people in seats. You win games. And if you look at the schedule, which is another thing, he goes on with the tradition and the rivalries and these things. If you look at the schedule, look at the teams that we're playing. We're scheduling more top-tier teams than we would. If we were in a conference, you get maybe a couple of those games a year. Next year, we're going to play three or four of these games. And then you're still got games against San Jose State, Fresno State, Hawaii, Boise State, Utah State, Utah. These are all the same teams we'd be playing if we had remained in the Mountain West Conference or older versions of the WAC or whatever it is. You go to the American Conference, you're certainly not going to get any of that. We don't have any history with any of those teams.
But here's the thing. Who cares? Who cares about a rivalry with Wyoming? We'll get to that here in a minute. Or that we played UNLV a bunch of years in a row. Who freaking cares? No BYU fan that I know cares about any rivalry outside of Utah and Utah State. And even the Utah State one, there's a lot of fans that don't care. And maybe now Boise. Okay? I did like playing Air Force because I respect the academies and what they stand for, and you know their offense was kind of interesting to watch, since you didn't see very much of it. But who the freak cares? Like, oh no, we're not playing New Mexico every year. Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
And it doesn't grant you any better access to the college football playoff. As a matter of fact, I think it hurts you.
His whole argument is Boise State, which is absolutely ridiculous. Okay.
Call me when they get into the playoff.
They haven't gotten in there. In their best year, we talked about this before, in their best year, they would not have made the playoffs. Right? They got into a New Year's Day Bowl, and that's awesome. And we have not since, since the Cotton Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. And I get that. I get that. They've had a better – he does make the point. They've had a better run in the last 10 years than we have. Okay, that's fair. Their stadium seats –
That has nothing to do with independence.
It has nothing to do with independence. Their stadium seats, 37,000. Do you know, despite the fact that we have not been playing them that long, BYU has three of the best 15 crowds in Boise State history. Okay? Now, again, this isn't really about the Broncos.
Well, but even if you use Western Michigan as the example, right? Western Michigan's going to go undefeated this year, didn't sniff the playoff. And a big part of his argument is essentially go to one of these conferences, play a two, maybe three solid out-of-conference games, and then beat up on all the crappy teams in your conference, and you're going to go to the playoff. It's just not true.
Well,
it just isn't true.
How did it work out for Boise this year? They lost to freaking Wyoming. We have, in the history of
the winner of the Big 12 isn't even getting in.
The history,
like, you're not going to win the Mountain West Conference and get in unless you've played more teams, good teams out of conference than you can on their conference schedule. Sorry, go ahead.
How many undefeated teams are there in the history of BYU football?
Quick math here.
We've been playing football since 1922. One.
Yep.
Stop with the undefeated fans, Jason Buck, all of you. Stop it. We're not going to go undefeated. That's not a realistic expectation. If that happens and you have that magical year and everything lines up, awesome, right? As a fan, I'd be stoked. Bama can't go undefeated every year, right? I mean, when was the last time University of Texas, we just talked about their program and all the resources they have. When was the last time they went undefeated? But you got me fired up now. You got me fired up, man.
But see, yeah, I mean, just the suggestion of going back to the Mountain West Conference just blows my mind.
Anybody who says that, I can't respect their opinion because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The American Conference, maybe. A restructured American. And I also get being in a conference, if we're not going to get into a P5, but the two biggest issues I had with Buck's thing is, number one, I am so glad he is nowhere near running this athletic program. He would run it into the freaking ground. Every one of his decisions is an economic disaster. You're going to add 20 more thousand seats to Lavelle Edwards Stadium.
No statistics that you're going to... Yeah, how are you going to sell those?
How are you going to sell those tickets? Who's paying for that? And then let's step back a little bit further, okay? So you set all this up, and then he all of a sudden says, now the P5 will come calling.
Because the media is going to know them, and the media will clamor for it.
The media already clamored for it. That didn't help us. Boise has done everything he said. How many Power 5 conferences have asked them to come? Houston, how are they doing? How's their bid for the Power 5 going? I mean, quite frankly, this article is ridiculous and not very well thought out, and I'm just really glad. I love Jason Buck. He was a heck of a player, and I love that he still loves and is passionate about BYU football. If he had told me, listen, I just want to be in a conference because I think it's more entertaining and it's more stable than independence and it's more predictable for fans and, you know, playing for a conference championship means something, I can buy all of those things. He didn't
I totally understand those. I don't feel that way, but I understand.
Yeah,
I wanted to be in a conference, playing for a championship, those types of things. I get it. I understand where that stuff is coming from. But that's not really what he's saying.
No, he doesn't make those arguments at all. It's all about, you know, and he leaves. He talks about, well, we got to address the elephant in the room. No, the elephant in the room is revenue, Jason. It's revenue. And what you want to do will send BYU backwards in revenue. So, no, that's the elephant in the room. Is that
you're gonna slash the revenue by I don't even know what the percentage there is. It's more than 50.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, you will.
And then you're gonna build, you're gonna put in 20,000 more seats.
When you haven't spend money and make less.
Right. And in 12 years, you're averaging 60,000 people in seats, right? You've not cracked 62,000 in a season since 2009.
Right. But gosh darn it, we should do it based on Jason Buck wants to. Now we're being a little harsh on Jason.
Well, and it's hard too, right? I mean, he's got emotions connected to the program that we don't have because he played there.
Sure.
Right. And, you know,
but come on, you think he's a bigger fan than you or I are of BYU sports? I mean,
I think his emotional tie is different than ours.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'd say over the years, I'm going to go ahead and wager that he's donated more money to the program than I have.
Well, you don't know how much I've donated to the program.
And I don't know how much he's donated to the program, but I'm guessing.
Probably
I'm guessing
more than either
because
of
he's,
us.
And probably just because he's had more time, right? And with time, we'll catch up, right?
That's right.
But
that's right. Once I get that NFL contract.
So, you know, but his investment is different
yes.
than ours.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah.
coming from a different place than we are.
He's just
right?
wrong.
So it's hard to criticize him because I have a lot of respect for him, but I disagree with his opinion.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I'm not criticizing his passion or his emotion, but I am really, really freaking glad he's not the athletic director. Because all of these proposals, they would not work out. Well, Matt.
Except for the Wi-Fi. I am 100%
yes.
behind the Wi-Fi.
No, I 100%. You're right, I shouldn't.
And to be honest, I don't think we need to give all the students free tickets because I think the students are engaged and students are going to pay for them and the students who want to go are going to pay.
Yeah.
Me for too. Whatever the package is to get them their tickets. But can I get behind the idea of giving them all free tickets? Yeah, you know, I could probably, you know, I have to look at numbers
we'll
and think financially,
it.
What does that really mean?
Yeah.
But I think I think that's a cool idea. I think that because when I was in school, University of Utah did that and we made fun of them really bad.
Well, see, I actually don't think it's a good idea. I think that shows that you're junior league if you have to give your tickets to students. Do you think Michigan worries about giving away student tickets? I mean, I'm okay if you do it. Like, seriously, no joke. Like, if you decide that's a way to invest in the future and we've got these fans here and we're going to pack it with students because we think it's the best, but don't for a minute think that makes – don't think you're fooling anybody, right, into all of a sudden, well, their attendance went up. That's amazing. Like – the press is going to know, oh, they give away tickets for free, which again, like I said, I'm not against it. I just don't think that all of a sudden you're going to give away tickets, build, and all of a sudden be able to expand by 20,000 and join the P5.
Well, and also, I don't think we have a student engagement issue.
No, I think you pointed that out pretty well. So let's move on to men's basketball, Matt, before this becomes
Oops.
An entire independence episode, which we probably need to do one of those in the offseason.
We should do like a
state of independence.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have Jason Buck on to argue with us.
That could be a fun conversation.
Yeah, he could come on. I'd love to chat with Jason Buck. A lot about
who doesn't want to chat with Jason Buck? The guy's a legend.
He is a legend. So Matt, BYU basketball, something has changed, Matt. And we're going to start out with Gary Payne, okay? Here's what Gary Payne says from the Tweetback. UVU loss moved me from Ainge to Carlino excited. I'd agree, Gary. Now he says he's at Noah Hartsock excited. That's
love
actually
it. Love Noah Hartsock on the scale.
I love it. Zags are really good. Can we challenge for a WCC title? Let's get back to that in a minute. We'll get back to the Gonzaga question here in a minute. I want to go back to Colorado, Matt. This is the win BYU needed.
Yep.
They needed a win against a quality major conference opponent before the conference season started. Because once we get into the conference, there's only two teams that matter, both winning and losing against them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else you're supposed to beat. So this game against Colorado, Saturday against Illinois, though they're, I don't believe, as good of a team, at least on paper, as Colorado is. Matt, they played defense. And Mika had a quote-unquote off game, and they beat a top 50 team. I was very impressed. I thought that was the most impressive Weber and this game It's the best two games defensively they've played all year.
Yeah. And you got, like you said, this is the time where you've got to start putting that stuff together.
Yeah, because there's not a lot of other chances here. Obviously, you know, they've got Illinois coming up on Saturday, who's probably a top, could be a top 50 team, top 75 for sure. And then the schedule gets very weak outside of St. Mary's and Gonzaga. Matt, let's get to another tweet bag question. This from Justin D. Sweeney. He says, have we ever had a Twin Towers like Childs and Mika? So, and then, so let's start there, and then we'll get to the second part of Justin's question. Matt, the answer is I don't think so. We've had other good big guy combos, but I don't know if we've had two in the same vein as Childs and Mika. I'd love for listeners to disagree or throw on others. There was Chapman and Smith, but Smith wasn't a back-to-the-basket guy anyway. And I'm sure I'm missing some from the 50s or 60s where we maybe had multiple big men. But, Matt, ever since Childs came into that starting lineup, this team has a different feel offensively and defensively right from the tip.
Yep.
And, you know, Mika is awesome. We talked about this last time, one of the best, probably a top 15, 20 player in college basketball. If Childs might be that good eventually.
Yeah.
Now, if he's got to get his free throw shooting above 50%, that would be nice. Matt, ceiling, Justin asks for a Hawes-Mika duo at least through next season. So let's talk about that, Matt. Hawes and Mika, obviously Mika is a more experienced player, had a year before his mission. Hawes is still going through, I think, some freshman up and downs. Brilliant pass one time down the floor, and then, you know, stupid turnover the next. Matt, what do you think the ceiling is for that duo?
So when we talk about the ceiling for that duo, is how far do we think they can take us?
I think I would break the question into two. How far can they take us? And would they become the best? Could they make an argument for the best duo in school history? So let's take the first one first. How far can they take us?
I think because of what they have around them and the relative age, you know, we've got some youth in terms of eligibility, I guess. We've got some youth on this team. You know, and you look back at, you know, say the Jimmer Brandon Gavies year where we thought, this is a Elite Eight team.
Yep.
Or better. I think we're in that space. You know, give these guys a year or two. I think you're in that space. You're looking at a couple of guys that could take us to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
And maybe compete for be competitive in that matchup. But do I think it's possible for them to get into a Final Four? Maybe. But if I were to gauge them right now, that's where I see them getting to, if things go well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's their ceiling, which is about as, for BYU basketball, as good as you can hope for, right? I
mean, you're basically saying that they could put together one of the best BYU basketball teams of all time.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, if you're looking at top duos, you mentioned Jimmer and Davies. You obviously would put Ainge and Durant in there, and I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of duos. But yeah, their ceiling is right up there. Matt, the question that a lot of folks are asking now after that Colorado win, and Gary asked it, and we also had one from Justin Whiting, that's at JN Whiting on Twitter. If the Hoops plays like this, Justin said, like they did against Colorado, can they beat St. Mary's or Gonzaga? Matt, do you feel, I think the answer, of course, is yes, they can. Of those four games, they probably win at least one of them. The best case scenario, of course, is winning all four. I'm Captain Obvious there. Matt, do you feel any better about their chances to maybe sneak two victories in four chances against St. Mary's or Gonzaga? Or do you feel like we did a week or two ago when we talked about it, that one is probably about all we can hope for at this point.
Oh, I think they squeak out two. I mean, if you look at the schedule, and I think this is really what works in their favor, you play St. Mary's on the 5th of January.
Yes.
Then you don't play either of those teams again until February 2nd.
Yes.
You've got 6-7 games.
Yes.
Between that St. Mary's game and the Gonzaga game, you've got a month of basketball to play. And if there's one thing we've seen Dave Rose do for all of his faults, and I love Rose.
Yeah, me too.
Is developing a team over time, figuring out the right combinations over time, and getting better as the season goes on. This team will be playing better basketball in February. Significantly better basketball than they're playing right now, in my opinion. I think if you go back and you look at the Valparaiso loss is what it is. The Utah Valley loss,
stinks.
We've all got feelings around that. It stinks, right? It's too bad. But the team that beat Colorado doesn't lose that game.
Right.
Right? And I think you see more. I think as the season goes on, you see more of the team that beat Colorado, and that team can compete against St. Mary's and Gonzaga. Will they pick up one of those two wins on January 5th? I don't know. Game on the road. It's just a few weeks away. I'm not sure. But you get into February. Do I think they can beat St. Mary's at home and then take one from Gonzaga? Sure.
Well, and we certainly saw that St. Mary's is beatable. They had, as bad as our loss was to Utah Valley, they now have a loss like that on their resume. I mean, St. Mary's, Gonzaga, I feel differently. St. Mary's is a very, very good team this year, but they are not Kentucky, right? Let's ease back. I think a split with them is the likely scenario. Now, I think the likely scenario, unfortunately, is Gonzaga sweeps us, right? That being said, to your point, we don't play Gonzaga till late. And if Childs continues to develop, if Hawes develops, and Emery still has only one really good game under his belt this entire year, that's not going to last, right?
Yep.
And if people, you hear, and I feel like Brad Daugherty has now called like half of our games. That's not true. But it seems like ESPN has had him on a lot. And I love the insight that he shared about the team, one of which I really liked was he obviously has watched film. I don't think, obviously, Kafusi's going to come in and be a world beater. But against teams with a good front line, like Gonzaga, that's one more body they can throw at Karnowski. Right?
Yep.
And fouls that they can use that aren't, that don't have Mika on the back of the jersey, right? So I'm with you. I feel this Colorado win changes things for me a lot because we actually played perimeter defense. And we had hardly played any all year. Not well, anyway. So I'm feeling a lot better. Illinois coming up on Saturday night. Obviously, Matt, that's another game that if you can get that on a quote-unquote neutral court, though, I mean, it's technically neutral, but like the USC game, I don't know that it will feel neutral. But if you can get that one.
Illinois should probably have a lot of alumni out.
Yes, probably. But I think if you win that one, Matt, I think you, as long as you only drop like one bad game in conference and then get one or two wins against Gonzaga, St. Mary's, I think you're in the tournament.
Yeah, you could get in there.
Because now you've got some out-of-conference quality wins on the resume, which is a big deal.
Because Colorado and Illinois were both potential tournament teams.
Yes, absolutely.
And you've got wins against them, and then you've got the loss against Utah Valley hurts.
Yep.
And the likelihood that we drop one of these other games.
We'll drop one. You will. Every year we've been in the WCC, we have. We've dropped a game we shouldn't have. Most years we've dropped two or three we shouldn't have. And, we played USC pretty tough, and I think when all is said and done, they may end up being the second-best team we play all year, not called Gonzaga. They were good, Matt. I was impressed. If they stay healthy and stuff, I think they could be really good. Matt, let's talk about the Poinsettia Bowl.
Poinsettia.
So, a couple of tweet-bag questions. This is from Dan Roach. That's at BruteDR on Twitter. He asks how excited we should be for the Wyoming matchup. And then a related question from Johnny Ashton. This came off of Facebook. Is BYU playing Wyoming in the Poinsettia Bowl equivalent to the basketball team playing in the NIT? It's better than no postseason. I'll definitely watch and cheer for them, but I'm not sure that a win really means anything. Matt, are you with Johnny? And how to Dan's question, how excited should we be about this matchup with Wyoming in the Poinsettia Bowl?
So I don't know if I'd compare it. Sorry about the voice crack there. Don't know what happened.
Change.
So I don't know if I'd compare it to the NIT.
It's a bad. It's apples and oranges. It's a little, you know, a little hard to compare, but
yeah. But you know, is it the matchup I would have chosen? No.
Well,
does Wyoming have the ugliest uniforms in all of college football?
Yes.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
I don't know. There's a lot of ugly uniforms out there.
Fair enough.
But
it's a fierce battle.
So, you know, I don't know that, to be honest. I mean, you look at the potential opponents that we were looking at there at the end. Man, voice is struggling.
You got voice cracks all over. You need me to take over, buddy?
If you look at the potential opponents we had on the table, I don't know that I feel any different about Wyoming than I would about anybody else on that list, except for maybe Boise State.
Well, but that's,
you know, San Diego State.
Like,
you know, it's all the same thing.
You were playing a Mount West Conference team, right? That was inevitable. Boise, getting a second shot at Boise would have been my first choice, I guess. I always want to beat San Diego State. But San Diego's, take our history of Wyoming football aside. They're not a bad team this year. And they beat Boise State. And once beat San Diego State. So if BYU fans, I kind of feel like BYU fans are going to do this. Wyoming is not that much worse of a team than us.
Right.
So let's not get caught up.
But we don't want to think about it that way, because Wyoming historically is awful.
But that's the same thing I've
argued.
And
their football team is not great either.
When yeah, I like that. When Utah State was good a few years ago, like 3 or 4 years in a row. And BYU fans, every time we even, like, they gave up a touchdown, that's Utah State. It's like, guys, look at the quality of the team we're playing now. It does not matter how good they were last year or how good they were the last 25 years. Wyoming's a decent team this year, a good offense with an absolutely atrocious defense. Okay? So they do have an offense that, quite frankly, probably isn't much worse than ours. Now, granted, our offense is going to be totally different with Tanner at the helm, but I'm just saying, like, statistically, it's about the same. So let's, you know, this is exactly what I hoped for, that we'd play a decent team in this bowl game. It's not the name I wanted, but it's a win that means something, because they are a top, you know, half of football team. We're not. It wasn't like what was that game? The New Mexico Bowl, was it, when we played New Mexico, and they were like 6-6, and were probably barely a top 100 team. Like, this is a decent team, so I'm okay with it. It's, I mean, on 0 to Detmer scale, it's like, I don't know how excited I am. Sarkisian? Not, I'm kidding, that's too high.
I'm glad we got to a bowl game. I'm not here for the opponent.
Yeah.
In this particular game.
In this particular instant. So, Matt, let's talk about the Cowboys a little bit, all right? This is part one of our preview.
Here we go.
They're ranked by Football Outsiders as the 59th best team in football, 39th best offense, and the 105th best defense. Memo to Cowboy fans, including a few that have tweeted at me about how tough their team is. If you give up 69 points to UNLV, I don't believe you can be considered tough. Just saying. 69 points to UNLV. That's not in basketball. That was a football game.
Yeah, that's just embarrassing, right? I mean,
well-rounded offense, though. Brian Hill is their star. The running back had over 1,700 yards rushing this year with 21 touchdowns and averaged 5.5 yards a carry. But on the other side of the ball, Matt, they are terrible. They will be one of the worst defenses we have played all year. They're not very good at passing, and they're even less good at rushing the football. You know, Hill got a lot of yards against very poor defenses. Mm-hmm. Struggled against some of the better defense. Their one player to watch on defense is safety Andrew Wingard, 128 tackles. He has like 260 tackles over the last 2 years out of the safety position, including, I think in the last 2 years, if I remember right, about 15.5 tackles for loss, including 7.5 this past season. So a couple of players to watch. Matt, they are a weird team based on who they won and lost to. Okay? I'm not going to go through their whole schedule, but
they weird.
Beat Boise State, split with San Diego State. Obviously, Boise State's a very good team. San Diego State's a decent team. Beat Air Force, who's a decent team. Colorado State, who was okay this year. And yet, they lost to UNLV and New Mexico. And Eastern Michigan, who's not very good.
It just seems inconsistent, right? It's like this is a team that's just didn't quite put it together at all the right times.
Yes. But my point is, and we'll get to predictions. We're not going to do predictions this week. We'll do that on next Monday night show. But this is a team that could put together a good game against us. I think, unfortunately for them, we are a bad matchup. Our defense does well against the things that they do well. They're going to have to open it up and air it out. And I don't think even now that Tanner's got a month to have prepared in this offense, I think he's going to absolutely carve them up. But we'll get to predictions next week. All right, so that's part one of our Poinsettia Bowl preview, Matt. Poinsettia Bowl. So, Matt, this is the part where you and I start predicting every single bowl game that will happen this bowl season. Are you prepared
Here we go.
To do that?
We are so unqualified to do this. Just the regular, you know, regular, what am I saying? The regular disclaimer we throw out.
That's right. We have a lot of these teams, especially in these first few games that we're going to talk about, we have not seen. Nor will we likely ever see.
Nope.
But let's start, Matt, with this Saturday, December 17th, bowl season begins. Here's how
Here we
works.
Go.
We're going to tell you the teams, the bowl. We're going to tell you the line. And then we're going to tell you percent chance either of us see any of this game. All right?
All right, you let's ready? Get to it.
All right, so first up in the bowl season is the Gildan New Mexico Bowl. All right? This match is 8-4 New Mexico versus 6-6 UT San Antonio. New Mexico's favored by a touchdown. Matt, who you got in this one?
I'm going to go ahead and take New Mexico just because I don't know any better.
Upset City, UT San Antonio. No reason. I have no reasoning whatsoever. What are they?
Cooler uniforms.
Are they the... What are
Aren't they the Roadrunners?
Roadrunners, yes.
Roadrunners. Yeah, they're the Roadrunners. Their logo is awesome.
Lobos is pretty good, though. I mean, that's not a bad mascot. Percent chance you see any of this game.
Unfortunately, it's going to be 0%, but we'll get to why in a minute.
All right. I'll put mine at higher than zero, but low, 10%. The next game up, Matt, is the Las Vegas Bowl presented by Geico. 9-3 Houston versus 10-3 Mountain West Conference champ San Diego State. Houston is only favored by 3.5. How the mighty have fallen, Matt. Who you got?
I'm going to go ahead and take Houston here.
I'm taking San Diego State. I don't like teams who've just lost their coach.
Oh, but they got Major Applewhite. It's going to be fine.
That might be true.
No, it's not.
Actually,
no,
it could be. Not. It could be.
It's not going to be fine.
It could be true.
What are you talking? They named a coordinator the interim head coach and then hired another guy on the staff to become the head coach. They have switched head coaches for this game twice.
It's a little weird. It's
Go
a little
Cougars.
Weird. Go Cougars.
Good luck.
Good luck with that. So later that afternoon is the Raycom
You're not
Media.
Gonna give percentage chance?
Oh, sorry. Percentage chance you see any of this game?
It's also 0%, but I'll get to that in a minute.
Clearly, there's something going on. I'll put mine at about 25%. Matt, the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl. I have no idea what
that
means. I think it's a new one.
Camellia.
That's in Montgomery, Alabama. I think it had a different name before. Is that the before the Belk Brady's Bowl? What's that?
Is it the Belk Bowl?
It was the Belk Bowl before, right?
No, Belk Bowl was in Charlotte, maybe.
No, you're right. You're right.
So a camellia is a flower.
They're trying to copy the poinsettia bowl.
It's a Japanese or Indonesian flower.
Yeah, I don't know. Who cares? 9-3 Appalachian State and 9-3 Toledo. Appalachian State's favored by a point. Who cares? I'll take Toledo.
Taking Toledo because their mascot still looks like Das Punk.
Yep.
Or still, Punk or whatever the name of that band group is.
Still does. Percent chance you see any of this game?
0%, but I'll explain that in a minute.
Man, you keep punting on that. I'll say 25% just because I may be watching the Houston San Diego State game and change the channel during commercials. Matt, at the same time as the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl is the Auto Nation Cure Bowl, also I've never heard of, in Orlando, Florida. 6-6 Central Florida versus 7-5 Arkansas State. Holy crap, what a terrible bowl matchup. Central Florida favored by 5.5 points. Matt, I'm taking the Knights.
I'm taking Arkansas State.
All right, taking the upset. Matt, percent chance you see any of this game?
0%, but I'll get to that in a minute.
Good golly, you're a broken record. 25% for me, already mentioned about that. The nightcap is the RL Carriers New Orleans Bowl in New Orleans, Narlands, Louisiana. 6-6 Southern Mississippi versus 6-6, though they might be sick as well, Louisiana Lafayette. Southern Miss is favored by 4. Holy cow, these games are terrible. I'm going to take Southern Miss in this one. Matt, who you got?
I'm taking the Raging Cajuns.
Percent chance you see any of this game of the Raging Cajuns?
I'd say it's about 10%.
All right. Mine is 100% chance I will see at least some of this game, because even as terrible as it is, I'll probably see some of it. Matt,
so I'll go ahead and throw